It is 4:31 and time for Valley Voices. You're listening to KDNK. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. And my guests today are attorneys. We've got attorneys in the house. Glenwood Spring attorney Angela Roth and Beth Klein, attorney and CEO and founder of Klein Frank PC, an all-woman law firm with offices in Boulder and the Roaring Fork Valley. Angela, after 9/11, became an Air Force Judge Advocate General. You became a JAG?
I did.
Wow. For 5 years.
Yep, and it was some of the best 5 years of my life.
Really?
Absolutely.
Why?
The people that I worked with, the caliber of people, and the mission was very fulfilling for me.
Wow. That's really impressive. And Beth has taken on cases as a trial attorney against major corporations and military contractors committing abuses in war and conflict zones. And you've been to Iraq to handle a case, have you not?
I handled a case out of Iraq that occurred during the surge.
Oh,
and
wow.
We brought witnesses out after negotiating with the emerging Iraqi government to Turkey to preserve their testimony for trial, and they won, and we were able to do some good things and upgrade the conduct of some military contractors.
Was that scary?
I think more scary for the witnesses than for me.
Right.
You know, having some attorney in the United States call you and ask you if you'll get on a plane to Istanbul. You've never been on a plane. You're going to get on a plane in the middle of the night out of Erbil. You don't know this person, and you just trusted it, and you hope things would get better. So, you know, I was afraid, but they were the heroes, the witnesses were.
Well, you could write a book, I bet. Have you?
I think my client in that case is in the process of writing his book, his story. It's his story.
Okay, interesting. And you have also received various awards, Beth. The Woman's E-News 21 Leaders Award for your work as an attorney advocate for the enslaved. And we're going to be talking a little bit more about that today. And you've written one of the most effective anti-trafficking laws, pro bono. You did that pro bono. And the Denver Post has deemed that you are, you won, what, did they honor you with the most influential woman in Colorado, or one of them? Or
one of them.
Yes. I could go on and on.
Let's not.
You know, and Angela, you have organized a conference in Rifle tomorrow.
Yes, we're very excited to share it with the community.
It's about a really tough topic.
It is. It's one that they focused a lot on when I was in the military. It was something new that came about while I was in. This idea of training us to look for victims of human trafficking, to avoid locations where they could be found, and to avoid situations where you may contract with that person in a way that's harmful to them. And then as I have grown older, a friend of mine, his sister was murdered in Florida, and she was a sex worker. And that really struck me because he has so much pain from that loss. And then I ran into Beth, and she told me what she's passionate about. And it turns out that we're both very passionate about the same thing. And the first thing we can do is to educate people about what it is and how to identify it.
Okay, right. And that, you know, I really want to get, we only have like, you know, a half an hour, and that's definitely not enough time to talk about all of this. But, you know, I'm thinking as a society too, not just on this radio show, we need to go deeper into just identifying it. I mean, you know, some people have no idea what human trafficking is, and I'd like to get into that a little bit. But, you know, I really think that, you know, taking a look at what does it look like, who's involved, what really helps, you know, what parts of society, what parts of it can society stop? You know, I think it's a, in my opinion, it's sort of a social, definitely a social issue. It's a big issue. But before we sort of dive into all of that. You know, my guess is, I mean, this is such a big issue. You know, Beth and I were talking, was it today or yesterday? Today, I think. And it's, you know, and I've done some research a little bit, and it's a huge issue. I mean, huge doesn't even define it. And it's not it's not unique to any one nation that I've found. It impacts all kinds of people. And I wonder if we're all probably, you know, 1 to 3 degrees of separation away from someone who has been impacted by human trafficking. Is that silly or does that make sense?
I believe in that fully, especially after my friend lost his sister. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't become a sex worker because it's a choice. It's usually something that someone brought you into, and she was brought into it as a teenager.
Hmm. Brought into it as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Can you be more specific? I mean, I know that sex workers are not the only trafficked population, and I want to talk about that too, but how is someone brought into prostitution or sex working?
Well, Beth had a really fine example that she's going to talk about at her her portion of our training tomorrow. So I think I'd like to have her talk about some of the ways she's experienced.
All right, great. Well, when girls are between the age of 13 and 18, they go through a process where they're confused about themselves, their sexuality, their power. They want to be loved. They want to have a boyfriend. Those kinds of things. We as women remember that.
Sure.
And
mm-hmm.
so many girls who are brought into the life are typically middle school girls. They're brought in because they're seeking love, affection, connection. And this is what it looks like to them. The majority of girls that I am aware of who are in prostitution and brought in at a young age are brought in by older boyfriends. They're brought in by gangs, the Crips and Bloods in Denver. One of my friends, who's a heroine, she and I are the same age, and she was turned out as a prostitute when she was a young teenager right by the Capitol building in Denver. And she, you know, serviced the men by the cat house that used to be on the north side of the Capitol, and, you know, some of the professional people that were up and down that street. You know, she's had a life. She's gotten out of her life. She started an amazing rescue operation called Veronica's Voice in Kansas City that is really a model for the world. And they set up women who have recovered enough and who have made their own decision to start their own businesses. And so they've started a lavender farm. They've started making cosmetic sachets. They have all kinds of different businesses. But these women are learning basic business skills. They learn balance sheets. They learn computer skills. They learn marketing. They learn what they love. They learn how to connect to people. And they already knew how to connect to people. They have some skills, and they're very savvy. So she's doing an amazing job now and treating people with dignity. And
that's key.
So that's it.
So why are you so passionate about this issue, Beth Klein?
Well, I got enlightened in this issue when I was very young. My grandfather bought a mail order bride for $50 for her life. And he had many marriages, and he was a very interesting man. I only met him one day, and he had this girl with him from Thailand named Cora, and he was bragging about how he bought her life. And I looked at her, and she's the same age as me, and mm-hmm. You know, that took a lot of processing. That's back in the 70s when Hugh Hefner lifestyle ruled. Child abuse
was a mail order bride.
Yeah, from Cherry Blossoms magazine.
Wow, and she was from Thailand.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I will tell you, I've tried to go and find her.
Really?
Yeah. And I, even with all of my assets, I've never been able to locate her again. And that has haunted me. She has inspired me. You know, I've went to college in Ireland. I went to finished up in former Soviet Union. You know, I've been around the world. I've worked in this area, and you know, in child abuse, and this is just some place where I felt I could do some good, and that's what drives me, is making a little bit of difference with this degree.
A memory of Cora.
Corazon, the heart.
Corazon, the heart. Wow, that's an incredible story. Boy, there's so much to talk about. Can we talk about the different kinds of human trafficking? I mean, I was reading the Klein Frank Foundation's website. We can talk about that too. And I was surprised to see so many different types of human trafficking. Can you talk about the different types?
Yeah, I can start in that arena. Tomorrow we have also pulled resources together from the immigration community. So we have Jennifer Smith. She's a local attorney, and she's done some wonderful things both in the Valley and along the border of the United States. And so another way is that people can be tricked to come into the U.S. under a specific visa, and then
tricked.
Yeah, and promised employment or promised all kinds of things. And they're not delivered. They're threatened. They're not paid.
Their passports are taken away?
Well, it would be an entry visa.
Okay.
In that situation. And she's going to talk about that. She's going to talk about just all the different ways that people can come to the U.S. and the different ways that those people who come to the U.S. can find themselves in that situation. Mm.
You know, you have somebody coming tomorrow. Uh-oh. Sorry. Where's her name? She's Eastern European. Marketa Zubkova.
Yeah.
Zubkova. I don't know how to pronounce her name.
And Ms. Klein knows her very well.
Yeah, Marketa is coming from, she's driving up from Gunnison, mm-hmm. and she has been an on-the-ground girl working with people who are involved in the labor trafficking and not being paid, not having access to health care or safety or other things. Also, Tom Acker will be here from Grand Junction. Mm-hmm. He drives out to field workers and checks on them, makes sure they're safe. Mm-hmm. And they have an enormous amount of data to share with the community about what's going on there and the compassion that these people need. They watch the animals. They watch the sheep.
Right, the sheep herders, in Wyoming and Western Colorado are an exploited population out here. Is that correct?
In my opinion, yes. And we've tried to make legislation to get them paid fairly, and we've not been successful.
How come? I mean, it seems to me to be a no-brainer. But what?
Well, you have to have a majority vote of the legislators, and there are. Is a sufficient influence that people want to keep wages low so that the farm industry, the agriculture industry, can profit. And mm-hmm. that tipping point has not occurred yet where the wages will be raised for that population. Dan Kagan ran that legislation, mm-hmm. and it failed.
Well, God, there's so much to talk about. There's legislation. I wanted to talk to you about something we mentioned this morning, but I also want to focus a little bit more on the different kinds. I mean, according to the website, we've got the forced labor, we have sexual exploitation, the exploitation of children in tourism, trafficking for tissue, cells, and organs, people smuggling, and child soldiers. Can we talk about the exploitation of children and the trafficking for tissue, cells, and organs?
Sure.
What?
What happens is people need kidneys, and they will kidnap children. This happens more often in the third and fourth world. They will harvest a kidney without consent. They'll sell it on the black market. We had a major United States corporation, W.R. Grace, who was caught in that distribution chain. So that is a real thing. And it is, you know, that's something that if we had a good supply of organs in the world, that wouldn't happen, but we don't. And so people feel like they can go and take what they want.
They kidnap children and take their organs from
yes.
them. This is really shocking. You know, I mean, it's the stuff that you see in horror movies. And for some people, this isn't a horror movie. This happens in real life. You know, one of the things that I'm wondering is how do people, law enforcement, attorneys, detectives, whatever, how do you find these people and bring them to justice? How does that happen?
We are going to have someone, you know, Tom Acker is going to start talking about that. And then following that, we have Senior Deputy District Attorney out of Denver. She's mm-hmm. going to be there to talk about how we prosecute those, which means mm-hmm. what type of evidence do we gather. But as a criminal investigator, you can find these perpetrators on the web. You can find them on the street. You can find victims in those same places. And so why I was so passionate about setting up this training is mm-hmm. because I want people in the law enforcement community and prosecutors and the rest of the community to start asking those questions when they come across.
Like what?
Well, you know, for a general question can be, you know, do you feel safe?
Okay. So this is for somebody they find on the street or?
Right.
Okay.
You could even find them in a car.
Okay.
You could find them mm-hmm. at a residence.
Okay.
So do you feel safe?
Mm-hmm.
Can you leave? Are you free to move about? You know, in a working situation, do you have time off? Where are you allowed to go during your time off? So just kind of more open-ended questions mm-hmm. to try to get some dialogue going and to see if you're hearing red flags about, no, I'm not allowed to leave.
But would trafficked people, be willing to talk to law enforcement and answer questions like that?
And I can't answer that.
Yeah.
I think what you have to do in that situation is ask the questions in hopes of building
mm-hmm.
rapport
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and not be afraid to ask the questions. You may not get the correct answers, but if you don't even ask the question, then how can we possibly identify and help these people?
Sure.
You know, children belong in certain places at certain times, and you can identify kids who are not in the right place at the right time.
Okay.
If you see a middle schooler walking down 83, that kid should not be there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So law enforcement, keeping their eyes open, they can start looking out for kids in the wrong places at the wrong times.
Mm.
Another encounter is in the emergency rooms. There was a study that was done that trafficking victims will show up in an ER room 6 times before they're identified. Now, that was several years ago, and Denver General Hospital has done an amazing job pulling together best practices with their gang unit
mm-hmm.
and different units to identify these girls,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that they get examined for tattoos, especially branding tattoos.
Tattoos.
These kids are branded like property. They will have, you know, daddy or maybe a rooster, or they'll have a, you know, like the scan stamp that you have. They
like
have
a barcode?
Like a barcode. And they, these brands, these tattoos, associate them with certain pimps.
Okay.
The other thing is that, you know, that if you have some kid coming back for repeat OBGYN examinations, that raises flags mm-hmm. if they keep coming back with beatings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the time when you can separate the girl or the boy out from the person that has control over them and have those questions answered. And I have to say, I've been so impressed. We have so many people coming from the hospitals and the ER and risk management to this conference to get this education. You know, kids who are riding alone in the back of cabs, kids who are with adults that they shouldn't be with, kids carrying weird things that maybe they shouldn't have.
Like?
You know? Well, you know, you have a girl, you know her, you know, here in Carbondale, and all of a sudden she starts carrying around a Chanel bag, and her boyfriend starts coming and picking her up at 3 o'clock from school every day.
Okay.
Teachers, that is a dramatic change. There's a financial change, and there's a figure involved, and that those are the types of things that when people see that, they'll get invested in it. We're going to, you know, there's a list of thousands of things people can look mm-hmm, for, mm-hmm. and that ought to give us a few things to think about. But when kids start failing in school, when they stop showing up in school.
That can also be indicative of drug use.
Yeah, and drug use is a great control item. It's one of the major things that keep people controlled and wanting to make money and keep getting their drugs. And Mark Byrne, who's an expert in the opioid epidemic and opioid litigation, will be here to talk about the big picture of what opioids have done, how it drives human trafficking, and you know some of the things that are being done at the national level and the state level to address those issues.
You know, human trafficking events and speakers have come to this valley at various points. And this seems to me to be the biggest event that I've seen in a few years. There was one recently in Aspen. But I'm wondering if, you know, it seems like they're getting a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger, a little bit closer together. Is this reflective of the issue, how it's grown, or maybe is it just reflective of the awareness of it?
I think for me, it's reflective of the fact that I was put in touch, you know, with Beth. Mm-hmm. We met at this women's bar event, and I have strongly wanted training for police officers in the various jurisdictions that I work for. And when I met her and she told me she has all these resources, then that's how this came to fruition. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about prior to this, what other people's motivations were, but for us, I guess we really didn't know what was going on in the Valley before we started planning this. And then once we started planning it, we found that there's so much support. And so we've used that support in the form of volunteerism.
Well, we have like 2 minutes left.
Oh.
3 minutes left for 3 minutes, unfortunately, because all my questions, I didn't even get to half of them, like John School and some of those things, which I think is really unusual. But is there a lot of trafficking in the Roaring Fork and Colorado River Valleys?
I think there is, and I think it's unidentified. And we had a recent case that was in the newspapers, and it ironically came out right while we were finalizing our initial plans for for when we were going to hold it. And
was this the Braden case?
The guy who worked
for the city of Vail, and he was caught up in the prostitution ring?
No, I was thinking of the one that happened at the Ramada Inn in Glenwood Springs, around the I think summer.
Okay, well, but he was part of that.
Okay,
I think he was the John involved, and we have grand jury indictments against the two defendants, both from Aurora, both brought the children here. Mm-hmm. The women had been trafficked by the man before. And this is one of those things that's a cycle, and it's time to break that cycle.
It's a cycle, like domestic violence.
Exactly, and child abuse. And I think the reason why the events are growing, I mean, when I got involved, there was not even language for this. I think
really?
It's because people care. Hmm. And I think that they feel that they can do something about it, and they want to. And as soon as we all start rowing the boat in the right direction, this will end. And
do you really think?
I do.
It's so huge. I mean, it's worldwide. It, you know, we listed all of those different areas. Can this end?
We can end it here. Okay. We can start ending it in the geography that we have control over. And I hope that tomorrow's event, Angie's vision, that we are both put out of business and we don't see this ever again. That's what I hope.
So really quickly about the event, it's at Rifle CMC, and what time?
It starts, people register at 8 a.m.
8 until
the programming starts at 8:30 until 5 o'clock.
Okay, and is there a website that people can go to find the agenda?
In it to end it.
In it to end it. Is that
yes.
INIT numeral two end it dot
com.
In it to end it dot com. It's going to be a great conference tomorrow, and I really want to thank both of you, Angela and Beth Klein, for coming on to the show. Would love to have you come back and talk more about this.